Oh,
welcome
boy.
To Men I Like to Date and Kiss and Marry Day on the Stephanie Miller Show. Very, very exciting. Jackie Schechner furious that I'm hogging all the man meat here in Captain America's underpants. However...
And you're not talking about Jim and me.
No!
No!
Minnesota Vikings punter Chris Cluey on the big show today. Michael Tomasky yep. of the Daily Beast. Australian rugby star turned actor Ian Roberts. Mm-hmm. And Hal Bonza. Sparks. Hal Sparks, sexy that we're all... Live on the big show today. All right. Lots going on. It's really... Okay. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. Presidential press conference yesterday and new developments in Boston. Really. Here's the thing. We're going to talk to Chris Cluey in about 20 minutes or so.
Yep.
This would be awful if this happens. I'm reading a story from TwinCities.com. Vikings. Chris Cluey's activism helped Jason Collins might hurt himself.
Yeah.
There's some controversy over whether he's going to be cut by the Minnesota Vikings and whether it would be because of his speaking out, which that would be boo. Boo preemptively on the Vikings. Did you know he's the best punter in Vikings history? How would that happen if not for, you know... exercising his First Amendment rights. I'm in a huff about this. Consider the timing for punter Chris Cluey, they write at TwinCities.com. 2 days after he started fielding questions about whether the Vikings would cut him because of his advocacy for causes, most notably same-sex marriage, Jason Collins credited him for making it easier to come out as an openly gay athlete.
That's right.
I made that point on the show yesterday. It's thanks to straight allies like Chris Cluey that are brave and have paved the
right.
way.
And Brendan Iron Bidet Joe.
That's why you don't mention him, not because he's not equal. It's awesome, because we cannot say his name. He might as well be in the family.
Sure.
Abendejo.
No, I am Badejo.
Right. Like that was better. Okay. Oh. Cluey congratulated Collins, saying, I'm really happy for him. He's finally able to live his life as the person he is. No one should have to hide a core part of themselves. Cluey, however, wondering how much longer he'll have a job with the Vikings and whether speaking out on causes will have anything to do with the decision. It's all a talk in the Twin Cities. The Vikings drafted UCLA's Jeff Locke in the fifth round Saturday. You know me. I'm always focused on with the draft, on who's going when.
Oh, yeah. Did you even
right,
know what
so
was
I
going
knew that.
On?
I just tossed that off like I knew. Okay. You didn't know what round, did you, Jim? You weren't paying attention.
What? No, I was responding to an email.
Okay.
Anyway.
Great. Oh, don't feel like you need to pay attention or anything. Okay. That's making him the highest drafted punter in team history, so that's what's starting a lot of this talk. General Manager Rick Spielman said drafting Locke was a normal personnel move, adding he had no issues if Chris Cluey wants to express his opinion. That's his right. That's his freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
However, Cluey, though, texted Pro Football Talk over the weekend saying, it's a shame that in a league with players given multiple second chances after arrests, including felony arrests, that speaking out on human rights has a chance of getting you cut. So he obviously is nervous about it. When asked by the Pioneer Press on Monday if he believed the Vikings would release him because of his advocacy for same-sex marriage, Cluey responded in an email, I don't know if that's the reasoning behind if I get cut, but it would be a shame if it was. I think my body of work speaks for itself. Statistically, Cluey, the best punter in Vikings history. So that would seem somewhat suspect,
yeah.
somewhat odd if he were to be cut, wouldn't it? So,
wow.
Somewhat, you know, coincidental.
Some ulterior motive of some kind?
Yeah.
Hmm.
He also stumped recently. He's just an awesome guy.
He is.
He's just a stand-up guy, not just on this issue. He stumped for former Raiders punter Ray Guy to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I mean, how many other athletes care about other people that much?
Yeah.
I mean, he, you know. Anyway, and after which, Vikings special teams coach Mike Pfeiffer said he wished Cluey would focus on his duties punting and holding for extra points and field goals. Well, how do you get much better than statistically the best punter in Vikings history?
Right.
So, you know, he basically said, I wish he'd stop speaking out for,
yeah.
you know.
He can do both.
Yeah, whether it's Hall of Fame stuff or marriage equality. Cluey said Saturday the Vikings have not talked to him about his outspokenness. And when he was asked about it in December, Pfeiffer said he hadn't discussed it with Cluey, adding he doesn't listen. Really? Well, how do you know he doesn't listen if you haven't talked to him about it?
Yeah.
I find him very easy to talk to. Huh. Spielman said Locke was the top-rated punter in the team's draft board and said Saturday the Vikings plan to have open competition at the position because apparently you have to be better than the best punter statistically in Vikings history. Though he would not comment on whether the team might cut Cluey before training camp. So I'm watching you. God is watching you, Minnesota Vikings, and I am watching you. Don't make me unleash Bette Midler on your ass, because I win.
Oh, please don't unleash Bette Midler.
I will.
On all of us.
I will do it.
Oh, God.
Okay. So we will.
All Bette Midler, all the time.
All right. So this brilliantly unique little sparkle pony will talk to Chris Cluey in just a few minutes. How about that? check me out.
Or I could be his other T-shirt.
Which one? No, you could not. No, stop it. Okay.
His lustful monster.
Right, right. Uh-huh. No. All right. The president.
Oh, by the way, I was at brunch with Matt Breen, editor-in-chief of The Advocate. And he wore that shirt to...
Did he?
Yeah, to brunch. I'm like,
well,
so you're the one who wears that in public. That's what I said to him.
Those folks are frisky at The Advocate.
They are.
They don't care. By the way, Hot Bree, Melissa Fitzgerald, friend of the Stephanie Miller Show, that's kind of the funniest T-shirt I've ever heard of. She actually had it made. It's different if you wear a T-shirt. Like lustful
monster.
She actually had a T-shirt made that said, "I'm what Willis was talking about." Get it? That's the obscure. Obscure, but if you're of our age.
You have to think
for a
second.
Gary Coleman. Yes. What's she talking about, Willis?
What's she talking about, Willis? I'm what
she said, "I'm what Willis was talking about."
Yeah.
Okay. Funny.
Okay.
All right. I know you were thinking about Jim. All right, the president.
You know damn well what I'm thinking about.
You weren't care. You don't care what's on the T-shirt, is what you're thinking. Okay.
I just care what's in the T-shirt.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So President Obama had a press conference yesterday. We actually carried live.
Uh-huh.
He needled a Republican. By the way, so I was back on CNN yesterday. I was on Aaron Burnett last night, Jim.
Oh, hey now.
Because they're having panels back after all the breaking news.
Yeah.
But I'm sick of reporters starting every question with Lindsey Graham. I did get one thing in. Somebody dared me to say a well-known Southern belle, Lindsey Graham.
Did you?
No, I did not. However, I did get in the vapors. I said, is there anything that does not give Lindsey Graham the vapors? I'm tired of, the reporters basing everything. Well, Lindsey Graham did. It's like, what? He has the vapors about everything.
Yes.
Benghazi, Boston, everything is the president's fault, right? Syria, it's always the president's fault. It's always the same premise.
He needs a helper behind him at all times with a fainting couch.
Right. And this is what irritates me, and I play right into it. Why? Because I'm a media whore. I see it in calls, and I say, what time you need me?
And what would you like me to say?
No, but what happens is the topic becomes, literally, I get an email, the president's Benghazi problem. I'm like, really? How many times did this happen under President Bush? How many people were killed at embassies around the world? There was never even a story.
Right.
It's because the senator from the green room, Lindsey Graham, says there's a Benghazi problem.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now there's a Benghazi problem and we must talk about it. Now there's two sides to this issue. There are two sides. We must hear both sides. What?
Mostly got to hear my side.
Oh, for God. And because the lawyer for, this is what one of the reporters asked him yesterday, right? Because Victoria Tansing, she said, Republican lawyer.
Yeah, why is she all of a sudden in the news?
Oh, because Victoria Tansing says that you're blocking access from Watergate Benghazi cover-up. Fainting couch. Plop. And then what? And then now it's a thing. It's a thing. Oh, is this, do you have that one? Okay,
yeah.
Yes. And this was the president's two snaps up in a circle moment,
That's right.
Yeah.
Mr. Graham is not right on this issue, although I'm sure it generated some headlines.
Snap.
Yeah, I think that what we saw in Boston was state, local, federal officials, every agency, rallying around a city that had been attacked, identifying the perpetrators just hours after the scene had been examined. We now have one individual deceased, one in custody.
Mm-hmm.
Charges have been brought.
Yes. It's not good enough.
You know what? I'm bringing a prop next time on CNN. I'm going to bring actually smelling salts. I'm going to say I brought these, Aaron.
Why haven't you
Lindsey
solved
Graham.
All the problems?
Something Somebody to help Lindsey Graham's vapors. I mean, okay, and these were the guys regularly on TV after 9/11. Oh, we all have to come together and, you know, get behind the president. This was the worst security failure in our history. And it was, obviously, as Richard Clark said, five-alarm, hair-on-fire memos that said specifically what was happening was a huge terrorist plot that was missed entirely.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, even Peter King, the Republican on Homeland Security, has said, Russia didn't tell us everything. As the president said, the FBI did their job.
Yeah.
And had they had more information, they might have done a different investigation, but they didn't. So two doofuses that aren't part of a larger network do something in Boston, and it's the president, and national security has deteriorated under President Obama. And that's the subject now? Really? Let's talk about the president's Benghazi problem and how national security has to... What? Really? And as the president said, they caught the guys, one's dead, one's in custody in 3 days. And this is... And meanwhile, it took President Obama... Pardon me, I just had to...
I had to reload.
I had to stop and reload, you see? It's good to have
a
smaller magazine because I had to reload. My point is, here's what I'm saying. Okay, and after 9/11, how long did it take President Bush to get Bin Laden? Never! That's how long it took him. It took President Obama to clean up that mess.
I don't care. I don't care where he is. I don't think about it much.
Yes, perhaps disbanding the Bin Laden unit might have something to do with them not him, Bush not getting Bin Laden. Do they cover that in the Bush Library and White Washatorium? Hmm? No. No, they do not. Okay. I'm just getting cranked up. Don't get me started. See, this is what happens because I don't have much time on CNN, so I'm saying everything I wanted to say.
Everything. Yeah. As soon as you get off the air, you think, oh, why did I say that? Why did I say that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And meanwhile, you're always at a disadvantage when you're on satellite. You're not in studio. Yeah. I'm standing literally on a little box. I am literally on a little soapbox with a little thing in my ear, and I'm like, argh! And another thing, Aaron. Oh, damn.
On an apple crate?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, little soapbox. Uh-huh. Okay. 17 minutes after the hour. I'm just getting warmed up. Much more on the President's Press Conference. All of this as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
That was strangely arousing.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. 22 minutes after the hour. Minnesota Vikings punter Chris Cluey. Coming up at the bottom of the hour. Squee. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Katie in Massachusetts on the President's Press Conference. Hey, Katie.
Hey, Steph. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Yes, I think the president did give a great response regarding Senator Graham's comments or the question. And first of all, it makes me angry that he has to even dignify these people with a remark. But what he should have said was, well, as far as the Boston bombings, I can assure Senator Graham that I did not miss a presidential intelligence memo saying Tsarnaev brothers determined to strike in the U.S.
Yeah,
that was not ignored
using,
or missed.
Yeah, using bombs. Literally, Katie, that's a great point. It would have been the equivalent if he'd gotten a memo, security memo, saying, you know, Chechnyans determined to strike with things like bombs at the Boston Marathon. That's how specific the 9/11 memos were, right?
Absolutely, and I wish he would have said that, you know, and say, guys, you know, you got to get a grip. I mean, we have come, because the comment was that bothered me was that have we gone backwards as far as intelligence gathering and national security, and that's the part that bothered me.
Yeah, well, I mean, Katie, again, I'll never forget that when the Condoleezza Rice was asked, do you remember the name of the memo? She's like, oh, I think a terrorist determined to strike in the United States.
Blah,
literally,
blah, blah, yada, yada,
it was
like the World Trade Center was mentioned using things like planes. It's like, oh, well, that was so unspecific.
So vague.
It was so vague.
Oh, I know. And there wasn't like some people reporting that there was a run on pressure cookers on sale either.
Yeah.
You know, that was the thing, like the guys flying the planes and stuff. You know?
Right. I mean, Katie, right. To compare it to two doofuses that figured out how to make stuff off the internet, you know what I mean? And decide, again, you can't, like Jim has said, unless you're in Minority Report, how do you know? I mean, they interviewed Tamerlan, the FBI. How do you know in advance what he's going to do unless he's part of a larger terrorist plot?
Your
again,
machine.
Had Russia shared more specific information about these phone calls with, you know, Zubidot.
Zubidibidot.
I'm just saying, I think we need that. We need to have that at the ready. Just
okay.
It's stuck in everyone's head now.
Yeah, so Obama got a warning. Kitchen implements.
Oh, by the way.
Determined to strike in the U.S.
Right. Kitchen implements. Ready to go. By the way.
How could he even ignore that specific warning?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's like the FBI was focused on mixers instead of pressure cookers or Cuisinart. They focused on the wrong kitchen implement.
Right.
That's what it was.
A Zubidot. A Zubidot. A Zubidot.
Yeah. Our fondest dream is going to come true.
What?
Get the water skiing sound effect ready.
Oh.
Boston bombing suspect's widow wants body released. Okay, weekend to Tamerlan. It's in the worst possible taste. And he already has, though, we read yesterday in the New York Times, he already has the mirrored sunglasses because he dressed like a douche.
Yeah.
So they'll have him sitting up in a convertible with the sunglasses.
He dressed like a reject from the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, exactly. Alligator skin boots and a white silk scarf and fur and... What a douche. Gene and... Oh, and I believe he said he liked to box in... he looked like Liberace, we were saying, and he likes to box in...
Chinchilla undershorts.
Right.
They never chafe.
Exactly. Gene in Minneapolis, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, Steph.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you again.
You too.
As the original Steph head, I want to tell you that I'm pleased that apparently you've become so popular it's getting harder and harder to call in. So
yes.
I'm really happy for you.
Thank you.
I'm calling because if it's true that the Vikings are considering cutting Chris Cluey because of his comments, I'm particularly peeved that it's the height of hypocrisy. It wasn't too many years ago when the Vikings team was in trouble. The entire team was in trouble because they were on a boat on the Mississippi having a party, and either before they got on or when they got off, they were urinating in yards. They had prostitutes on the boat. They did not have a very pretty picture as a team as a whole for their just entire team's values.
Well, at least they didn't have any gays, though. Then that would have been really morally repugnant.
Well, that's true.
You know,
boys will be boys.
Yeah. Gene, you know what? That's why I think it's just important to put a spotlight on the Vikings, because you know what? They'll never say that. They'll never. Of course they can't say that. Yeah, we cut him because of his, you know, exercising his First Amendment. But I just think, you know, if you're in Minnesota or not, call the Vikings, you know, let them know. Support him. Tell them, you know, we're watching.
Absolutely.
We're watching. And he's the best punter in Minnesota Vikings history. So it would be very suspect, I think, if he were cut.
What would be really nice if some other Vikings who have some moral integrity would speak up in support of Chris.
Right.
That's what would be really nice.
Vikings were never known for moral integrity, mostly pillaging.
Yeah, raping. Yeah.
The actual Vikings, the original Vikings. All right.
Oh, those Vikings.
Yes, thank you, Gene. Appreciate it. All right, we are watching you, Minnesota Vikings. Dave in Minneapolis. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Mama. I am... You know, if there's a dog barking in my neighborhood and keeping me up at night, I'm sure it's going to be Obama's fault.
Yeah.
So I'm going to call Scarlett O'Graham and ask her if she could get on Obama about this, since it's so upsetting. And clearly the number of our dog catchers is reduced under this administration. I mean, I am so fed up with this.
Yes, and by the way, Dave, you joke, but at the next press conference, some reporter will go, Lindsey Graham has spoken about your barking dog problem, Mr. President, why you're not doing more on that front. Yeah.
Oh, I know. I probably just gave him ideas, and I apologize to the American public for that right now.
Right, and I will be called on CNN to discuss the president's barking dog problem.
Because you and I are so close, and
that's
clearly
right.
We talk every day and consult, right?
That's right.
This still is about race. I keep thinking they don't want to see a person of color succeed. It would look bad for them. We might end up with more of them who actually care about people, and that just can't happen.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And can I say one thing about the football situation, since
yes.
I'm in Minnesota? And I don't watch it, but, you know, that's... Anyway, the lack of integrity is amazing. This is supposed to be the United States of America, where you can say what you want without fear. Now, it doesn't mean you're not going to, you know, have repercussions. We all have consequences for what we say and do at times. But this is so public and so obvious. Wouldn't their PR person say to them, maybe we don't want to do this right now? It just seems to me it's very, very fishy. And
the Minnesota Vikings you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, well,
yes,
we'll see. We'll see. Let's see what Chris Cluey says about it, because we'll talk to him next. Squee! On the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You are terrible. You've got no rhythm, no coordination. I've seen two epileptics share a bowl of noodles with more grace.
It is the Stephanie Miller
Show.
It's
a new reality show.
34 minutes after the hour.
Pardon me. Noodles.
I was distracted. I was Googling who is the best punter in Minnesota Vikings history. Oh, look, it's Chris Cluey. Squee. He joins us now. Good morning, Chris Cluey.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
I'm good. I've been watching you on the TV, and you were doing great as usual. How are you this
Oh, thank
morning?
You. I'm doing fantastic.
I was reading at TwinCities.com. We've been talking about this. Minnesota Vikings need to know I am watching them, along with the rest of the, along with the rest of the country. I want to talk about that first, because you obviously been brave and outspoken in supporting Jason Collins, as you always are. What is the situation there in Minnesota? It would seem awfully suspect to me if you were to be cut from the Minnesota Vikings. What do you think?
Well, you know, they brought in a punter in the fifth round, and that's generally a sign that that's the direction the team's going to move in. And all I can do is go out and punt to the best of my ability and, you know, just essentially trust in what I've done over the years.
Yes, well, it would be difficult to be better than the best puncher in Minnesota Vikings history, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be tough.
I can see why they need to have open competition, as they're calling it, at that position. Because they've obviously, there's been a couple of comments they've made about you being outspoken. I think one of the coaches said something about, oh, I'd like him to focus on, you know, again, your job. And I'm going, how do you focus better than being the best in Minnesota Vikings history?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've been very careful, you know, to do, is that when I am at the facility, I am there for football. I'm not doing anything else while I'm there, because that's what I'm paid to do. That's my job.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm watching them. So, Chris Cluey, obviously, you wrote a great piece. I mean, you've written you are an amazing writer, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
But you wrote a piece on CNN.com. This is before Jason Collins came out about why, you know, there is not an openly gay player in any of the four major leagues. What was your reaction when Jason came out, and the reaction to that?
Well, you know, it's great. I'm happy for Jason, because he's finally able to be who he is. You know, he doesn't have to hide anymore. And that's a shame that, you know, he ever had to hide a part of himself in the first place, because you shouldn't have to do that as a human being. It's not healthy for you.
Well, yeah, you say this piece is great, because you start it by saying, don't be a distraction. Those are the words pounded into every single NFL player's head from the day he enters the league to the day he leaves. The same message over and over: team comes first, sacrifice your personal goals, which is what you said, which is why you found it unsurprising that nobody has come out in any of the four major leagues, right?
Yeah, and I think really the thing now that a lot of guys are going to be watching is, you know, what happens with Jason Collins? Is he going to get a fair chance to compete for a job, or, you know, our team's going to pass on him? And, you know, yeah, he's a little bit older for an NBA player, but the fact is he's played, you know, at a consistent level for 12 years now. And you know, as a 7 foot tall player, you can't teach 7 feet tall. That's either something you've got or you don't.
Is your point you're born that way?
yeah, exactly. I'm trying to grow more.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, in this piece, you write, players run the very real risk of losing their jobs if the team deems them too much of a distraction. And it is interesting, I think, as you pointed out. I mean, there's been guys arrested, felonies, this, that, and really, just being gay would be a distraction, be considered a distraction.
Right, exactly, because that's the thing you see all the time. You know, there's guys, and there's not just guys getting arrested. There's also guys doing charity work. There's guys getting involved with various causes, and, you know, it's, when we're at the football facility, we're there to play football, but when we're not there, like, that's our lives to live as we want. And, I mean, I don't think any employer should be able to tell you, you know, you have to focus on your job 24 hours a day. I don't think that's sane.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, we're not even out of the studio before we've forgotten all about it. but, yeah, I love the way you write, because, A, you're very profane, which I love. And also, it goes to the point, you say, why do people care so much about someone else's sexuality? Why do people give to about how someone else lives his life? Why the do I have to even write this column for a major news organization to talk about something that shouldn't even remotely be a factor in sports? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, it's depressing, the fact that, you know, this is supposed to be America, land of the free, you know, where you are free to live your own life, and yet there aren't people who are free to live their own life. And I don't understand why people can't look at it and say, you know what, this isn't right. If I'm allowed to live my life, why aren't other people allowed to live their lives?
You write about it, what it's like to be on a team. Players on the team are a team. We eat together, we practice together, we watch film together, and I assume you don't mean Yentl. You mean team film.
And
you say that a gay player is suddenly going to just destroy all that because he's out is asinine. I mean, as you say, I mean, there's people in work. I love this part. You say there are millions of people across America who work with gay coworkers every day, and they handle their business without riotous orgies consuming the work environment. Right, why would sports be any different, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think people, like, so many people I talk to are like, oh, you know, it's going to be uncomfortable in the shower, you know, it's going to be uncomfortable. I'm like, what, you think that guys are just going to start going at it on the shower floor? Like, that?
Yeah.
This is a work environment.
Well, and that's the right value. That's
it's
the value
least sexy place in the world,
right?
A work environment.
And that's the, yeah, and that's the value, though, Chris, of Jason Collins. It's like, oh, I've been showering with gay guys for years, right?
Right, exactly. And he says it in his own piece. You know, I've been in the shower with guys, and nothing has happened. I've been professional. And I, you know, every other gay athlete that's played, because there's been gay athletes that have played, like, they haven't, you know, assaulted someone in the shower. I mean, it's this idea that really it's almost a form of narcissism from straight males, that they think that all of a sudden, if a gay guy sees them, they're going to be so overwhelmed by, you know, attractiveness that they'll have no choice but to mount them.
And
it's ridiculous.
And it's always the guys that really have the least chance of any gay guy ever wanting to hit on them.
Yeah.
And this is my favorite part. You talk about that. You say, players, those of you worried about a gay teammate checking out your ass in the shower or hitting on you in the steam room or bringing too much attention to the team, I have four simple words for you. Grow the up. That's just our job. We are adults. So would you kindly act like one? I mean, that's the thing, because I do find the hardest to understand is straight people intrinsically understand that they are not attracted to every single person of the opposite sex. Why would it be any different? For gay people.
Right, exactly. It's this lack of empathy, of being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and realize that this is how someone is living their life. You know, they're not going to turn into a ravening savage because of who they are. They are a human being just like you are a human being.
Right. Well, and you raise always such interesting perspectives, too, in this piece. You say, how much better would a player play if he didn't have to worry about hiding a core part of who he is? I mean, that's really important.
Yeah, and that's something that Jason himself addressed in his article. You know, he said, I feel like I've been baking in an oven for 33 years. And, you know, without a doubt, it's affected his performance, because I've seen guys, you know, that have been worried about, like a wife who's pregnant or a sick child. And that affects your game day performance because, you know, you're worried about something else. Now, if you're a gay player who has to worry about keeping your core being hidden the entire time you're in the building, that has to affect your performance, and not in a good way.
Yeah. Well, and the other, you know, point you raise, you say fans, media, will an openly gay player be a distraction only if you make it one? Only if you insist on denying someone the freedom to live his life on his own terms instead of someone else's control. You know, so far he's obviously, except for the usual right-wing fringe lunatics, he's gotten a lot of support, you know, around the country. How do you think this will, you know, go with the fans? I mean, it made my heart hurt in there when he said, I've been booed before, I can take it. I really hope he doesn't get booed. I mean, how do you feel like the fans are going to react?
Well, you know, I would hope that if the fans are booing him, it's for his playing ability. That's, you know, that's fair. I mean, as players, you know, fans are allowed to boo you if you don't perform well.
So if they, fans, yell, right, if they, yeah. yell, if they yell, you suck, then not that way. We just mean,
right, right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but you know, if fans do say something nasty or personal, then I would hope that the other people in the arena would be, you know, they would say to them, hey, that's not cool. This is a guy who's trying to do his job. This is a guy who's out there, you know, trying to be who he is. And just as you wouldn't want someone yelling that at you, why are you yelling that at him?
Yep. You close it, your piece in a really touching way. You say you are, as a teammate, a friend. You do not have to sacrifice who you are for the team to win, no matter what anyone else says. You are not a distraction. And you know, I think that's all we can do is, and I said this yesterday, and so did Jason, obviously, is, you know, it's people like you and Brendan that have, you know, made this possible, you know, the straight allies that have really paved the way and made it safe for Jason Collins.
Really, it's not just us, you know, it's everyone else out there that realizes this is an issue of empathy. It's a matter of, We have to treat each other the way we would like to be treated, because if not, we're fostering conflict and discord in our society. And historically, that inevitably leads to bad things. It doesn't end well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I want to mention Athlete Alley. That's the organization working to end homophobia in sports, because we should also mention Scott Fushida. Am I saying that right? Mm-hmm. Of the New Orleans Saints, along with...
Yeah, Scott's been great, too. He's, you know, he's you know, one of the original kind of pioneers with this, along with Brendan. I'm more of a latecomer to the party, but, yeah, they've been doing a great job.
Yeah, well, I mean, it made the Jason Collins thing possible, and I mean, I think it is a great day in America when you know, the president called Jason immediately, and you have to hope that between that and what's going forward at the Supreme Court that we're entering a new era here.
Yeah, I would really hope so, because as Martin Luther King said, you know, it's the arc of history tends to bend towards more, not less.
Yep, absolutely. Well, except the only bad thing that happens is I go from gay to questioning every time I have you on. And I know you're happily married, so it's all life is messy, Chris Chloe. All right. this Sparkle Pony thanks you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
I'll talk to you again soon, Chris. All right, there he goes. Minnesota Vikings punter. Oh, the best one in Minnesota Vikings history, by the way.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And he is a beautiful Sparkle Pony.
Oh, he really is. Okay, 45 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's just implied, but we all know what's going on in this thought bubble. The kids don't know, but we do.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
This hour of the Stephanie Miller Show brought to you by TheraBreath Mouth Wetting Lozenges. Pop it, great-tasting mandarin mint. TheraBreath Lozenge helps stop uncomfortable dry mouth fast. TheraBreath Mouth Wetting Lozenges available at Target, Walmart, Walgreens, and other fine stores. I have the mouthwash and the toothpaste, and I love it. Okay, 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. Barbara in California. Hi, Barbara.
Hey, Steph. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Hey, Steph, I watched you last night on CNN. I watch you every day, and I have to TiVo you for the husband. They pissed me off because they cut you off, but right on for sticking up for our president when, you know, they didn't say nothing to Bush about 9/11, and they were warned. So right on for that, because we got awesome president, and I wish he could have 4 more years for us.
Aw, there, Mitch McConnell would love that. Barbara, yeah, I mean, I tried to bring up, do you know how many, I didn't have the numbers like right at my fingertips, but do you know how many times this happened under George Bush? Do you ever remember there being a Benghazi problem? I mean, this has happened at embassies around the world, unfortunately, under every president, right?
Exactly.
And only because Lindsey Graham has the, once again.
Oh, my stars.
Does he ever stop clutching the pearls?
No.
Pearl necklace? Probably
he
not.
He always seems to have pearls around his neck.
Right. I know it. Really something. Okay. Here is the well-known Southern Belle, Lindsey Graham, now.
It's not so much about blaming people as to get it right. We've lost 8 Americans in 7 months, 4 overseas, 4 at home. Bin Laden's dead. Radical Islam is on the march. We need to up our game. Clearly to me, the systems did not work the way they're supposed to. I'm shocked that this happened after 9/11, where people no longer talk to each other. I thought we'd gotten over that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Republicans refused to increase funding for embassy security.
Right, but that funding for embassy, which Secretary of State Clinton asked for.
Coincidence.
Repeatedly, yes. I'm sorry, what did he say, 8 Americans? I'm sorry, have we added up the numbers under George Bush yet, including 9/11? How many Americans died?
That was a lot.
Yes.
And all the unnecessary wars?
Yes. And this wasn't necessarily specifically about, you know, not to our agencies not talking to each other. It was about Russia not giving us specific information because, you know, and obviously the FBI being somewhat suspect of Russia because they're always asking us to spy on Chechens because that's their political thing.
Yeah, that's their bugaboo.
Right.
It's our thing.
Right.
It's our bag, baby.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's not about blaming people. Yes, it is. You blame him for everything. You have the same template for every Meet the Press appearance. It's Benghazi. It's Boston. It's Syria. What about the red line? I think they have a fainting couch in the green room now at Meet the Press. Just for Lindsey Graham. All right. Pete in Madison, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Pete.
Hi. I'm a lifelong Packer fan, and I know all the Minnesota Vikings malfeasances chapter and verse. I think you had a caller earlier talking about the boat incident where they had Dante Culpepper, the starting quarterback, and half of the offensive starters were just out there on the boat having a good old time with prostitutes and then watering the lawns of Louisville, Minnesotans. And then you have Randy Moss, who hits a police officer in downtown Minneapolis. Nothing happens to him. And let's not forget that Brett Favre, when he was a Minnesota Viking, that's when pictures of his swan stuka came out.
Oh.
And he was still allowed to play.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, seriously, anybody, that is the height of moral decrepitude, if you ask me, being photographing your own penis in, what do you call those things? What are those kind of sandals? Disgusting.
Crocs.
In Crocs. Who masturbates in Crocs? I mean, really.
Well, you know, he was just trying to make a play.
All right, thank you.
The Schwanstucker.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Crocs. Oh. What do you think? You're just, like, looking down? That would turn you off? I don't know.
That would turn me off as much as Uggs.
Mike and Madison.
Well played, sir.
I'm not going to comment on whether or not I leave those on during that.
Oh,
okay.
God.
Yeah.
Mike and Madison, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I happen to agree with you about 20% of the time, but however, I do have an awesome show. Well, I'd like to make a little story about myself. I am completely 100% heterosexual.
Uh-huh.
Now, as me and my wife, or my wife and I go out to dinner, I would occasionally, regularly get hit on by a waiter who was gay.
Right.
Well, what happened is over a course of time, I'd always continuously go back to the same restaurant. Now, I'm almost at a point of depression because he doesn't hit on me no more.
Yeah. I understand.
I want to know what I'm doing wrong. So, Paul, if you hear me, start hitting.
That's how you... I love you, and I mean that in a gay way, Mike. All right.
All right.
Don't disappoint the straight guys. At least, you know, give it a little something.
Yeah.
Give them a little something. That's how you know you're getting old, when the gay guys stop hitting on you. Cheryl in Albuquerque, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I am a lifelong Vikings fan.
Uh-huh.
And I know everything there is to know about the Vikings. The reason Chris Cluey... Or the reason they drafted a punter is because Chris Cluey's stats are not that good.
What?
He used to be the best punter in Vikings history, but the last few years, he hasn't done all that good. That's why.
Well, hang on a second. Hang on. I have statistics here. Wait a minute. I'll get them. You just wait there. All right. I understand statistics can change over time, but he still statistically is the best in Vikings history.
But in the last couple of years.
I got it. But you wouldn't find that suspect, Cheryl, if they were to cut him after they've talked about his.
Not at all. Chris, as a matter of fact, the front office in Winter Park has already said that it has nothing to do with his comments on gay marriage.
Of course they're going to say that. Wait a minute.
Well,
I have fun facts for you. He averaged 44.4 yards per punt in his 8 seasons, the best average in team history by more than half a yard.
Right, but what about the last year or two?
Shush! Hang on. It would need about a half a season to eclipse Greg Coleman's team record for total punting yards. In 2012, Cluey's 39.7 yard net average was the best of his career.
Maybe they're not looking for the best punter in Vikings history. Maybe they're looking for the best punter
now.
In the NFL.
Yeah, maybe they're looking for the best punter now.
Not
over 8 seasons.
You are harshing my Sparkle Pony buzz, Cheryl. Thank you for calling.
The NFL is a business. If you're not performing up to your standards in the last couple of years, then...
I'm just saying. You and your facts.
Well, I mean...
I just read the stats.
I know. Those are over 8 seasons.
Right.
Yes, averaged over 8 seasons.
Averaged over 8 seasons, which means he had probably an awesome first 6 seasons. The last two, maybe.
Listen, watching you, Minnesota Vikings.
Oh.
All right. Yes.
Travis has some actual stats for you.
Oh, thank you, Travis.
Year by year. 45.
Okay, get back to OTB. All right. No wonder nobody's answering the phones. He's betting.
Yes.
He's betting the ponies. I can't really. Am I supposed to read that?
I have no idea what those numbers mean.
I'm going to need to study these. during the top of the hour break, and then I will be back with these numbers. But they look good
to
me. Look at
that.
I'll have to study that and get right back to you with a little information.
I'll try to find you some, and I'll bring them to you.
All right. And then when we also when we come back, Ricin Guy. I know, not as entertaining as Zubidot, but Ricin Guy is Ricin Guy, as it turns out.
Rice
what a
and
doofus! He bought castor beans on eBay. Oh, God. Doofus.
Maybe he
doofus,
thought they were fava
doofus.
Beans because he heard they went well with liver.
Right.
And nice Chianti.
Right. Right. Okay.
And you know who else we have?
Who? Michael Domosky, who I want to date and kiss from the Daily Beast next on the Stephanie Miller Show. It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 6 minutes after the hour. If I've said it once, I've said it a million times. It is hard. It is hard being the smartest person in the room. It really is. All right, I am right once again, Chris LaVoy, and you are, what's the word I'm looking for? Wrong.
Why am I wrong?
Wrong. Because you agreed with the caller that, oh, Chris Cluey's statistics are not as good the last couple of years. You are.
Computer says no.
No, no. I have the statistics in front of me.
Okay.
He had, for the best statistics in Minnesota Vikings history, he's the best punter ever with a 44.4 average, career average. His average in 2011, 45.7, and last year in 2012, 45. So that means that would be better than his average,
right?
Which is already the best in Minnesota Vikings history.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about football.
Okay.
So.
All right. So maybe you should.
If I did, I'd be working for a sports
station. Shut your pie hole. All right. You know what? We have all noticed my. I barely recovered from Chris Cluey, who is my favorite new writer, and not new, but just new to me, and my favorite, who I want to date and kiss on a regular basis.
Michael Tomosky of the Daily Beast.
Right.
Let it be.
Creeped him out already.
What are his punting stats?
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
What
Hi,
are
Ducks.
Your what are your punting stats? That's
well, I you know, I try not to punt anything.
John...
I was just checking out. You made me curious about Ray Guy, and I was just checking him out here. You remember? Well, you may not be old enough, but for my youth, Ray Guy of the Oakland Raiders.
Hi.
But no, he only averaged 42.4 per punt over his long career. So
Michael Tomosky bringing the punting statistics on top of the great writing. Daily Beast. Oh, I want to date you and kiss you even more. All right. Did John Fugelsang warn you how creepy I am about you?
A little, you know, there was a little taste of that, but you know, that's all right.
A little creepy, a little stalky.
I want to be hugged and kissed. You
I know?
Know.
All right. listen. I honestly love your stuff in the Daily Beast. You just hit stuff that a lot of people miss, and I love this new piece. You say for the first time, black turnout exceeded white turnout in 2012. Meanwhile, Republicans continue to alienate black voters. I mean, it really is incredible what they're trying to do nationwide while saying they're engaging in minority outreach, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. And the reason that I wrote that piece, Stephanie, is that I saw in most of the coverage of that analysis, it was an analysis the Associated Press did of the 2012 vote, that black turnout for the first time was higher by some measures than white turnout. And, you know, most of the pieces that wrote this up ascribed it simply to Obama's presence on the ticket. And obviously there's a lot of truth to that, you know, there's no denying that. But I thought, well, that's not the only reason here. I mean, black people understand, African Americans and Latinos understand that Republicans, you know, these voter suppression efforts in like half the states in the country are aimed at them.
That's
They're
right.
Not
well,
stupid.
And I love the way you say, I invite conservatives to deceive themselves into thinking this is the case, that it's only because there's a black guy on the ticket. You say, you know, for all this talk about a new GOP out to steal minorities' hearts, the usually white people doing the talking seem to forget that today's Republican Party is doing more to stop black people from voting than George Wallace ever did. And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, more than George Wallace ever did. And you know, it's a more openly racist regime right now than it ever was under Richard Nixon and his infamous Southern strategy or anything like that. You know, in those days, these things were done quietly in back rooms and in code and so forth. But now the Republican Party in many states in the country, arguably most of them, is just openly trying to pass laws
yeah.
that are very clearly aimed at keeping black people from voting.
Yeah,
and making it harder for them to
vote.
Right.
You say today's effort to keep African Americans and to a considerable extent Latinos, let's not forget, from voting is not regional and subterranean. It's national. It's official with the weight of governors and legislators across the country behind it. Unless you think this is going away, that 2012 represented some kind of crest, I'm here to tell you you are woefully incorrect. And you mentioned our other friend, Ari Berman of The Nation, who tracks these things so closely and, you know, state after state and the different kinds of things they're doing, right?
Yeah, Ari does a great job on this, and people who really are very interested in this issue, I will say, in all humility, should read him, not me, because he writes about it all the time. But yes, there are attempts to curtail early voting hours and you know, all these kind of identification efforts and many, many more across a broad, broad range of states. It's actually expanding. So it's not something that the Republicans tried once and it didn't really work and they're going to say, ah, forget it. This is part of this electoral strategy going forward.
Well, you know, and Michael, as you say, I love how it pretty much is imploded spectacularly on them in the last election, which is, I'm sure, part of what drove black turnout. As you say, you know, there can be no serious questions. African Americans watched the Republicans' barely sane thrusts and parries against Obama, the birtherism, the Kenyan socialist meme, and all the rest, and said, what a bunch of racist loons, thus resolving even more deeply to get to the polls. But, you know, you spotlighted one particular man. You said this went well beyond Obama. How to explain the story of the elderly African-American man in Florida, which made the rounds right after election, who stood in line till 1 a.m. to cast his vote. It was well after Obama had already been declared the victor. He was likely also voting not just for Obama, as you say, but to stuff it to Rick Scott and the rest of the state's GOP, which tried to pass an incredibly regressive voting law that a federal judge threw out.
Yeah, I was moved by that man's story precisely because he voted, you know, he could have gone home. I mean, if all he cared about was Obama, and we're making assumptions here, but it's probably fair to assume the guy was an Obama voter.
Right.
If all he cared about was Obama being elected president, he could have gone home, 2 hours before.
Right.
But
right.
he stood there and waited to vote. He was making a different point.
They underestimated, you know, I think how very, very seriously people take their right to vote in this country, maybe particularly black people, you know, because of what they went through to get it, right?
Yeah, exactly. They did underestimate it, and even I underestimated it in some cases. I mean, I remember being really surprised as I looked over the exit polls at the percentage of the vote in Ohio, particularly, that was African American. Now, that was, you know, that was a state where obviously they knew it was going to be close. They knew it might come down to Ohio. And boy, people really got out and voted in massive numbers.
Yeah, and you know, as the president pointed out, people should not have to wait in line for however 10 hours, whatever. I mean, as you say, story after story of elderly people that waited in line for hours upon hours, right?
Yeah, and you know, this is some reporting that I've never seen done, and it's probably hard, if not kind of impossible to do, short of just going around on election day and counting the machines. But I just wonder, you know, how many machines per voter there are in poor black neighborhoods as opposed to more affluent white neighborhoods. And you just have to assume, right, that in a more affluent white suburb, there are just more machines.
Mm-hmm. Michael,
you know, per 1,000 voters.
I told this story on election day. It took me probably 45 seconds to vote.
Yeah.
That's how quick it was at my desk. I mean, I literally went in, no line, voted out. I mean, I turned on the TV to look at these stories around the country that were just in Florida, 10 hours, some people in line. I mean, it just was unbelievable.
So you're not only white, but affluent, eh?
Well, I'm not really so how affluent, but affluent enough to vote in 45 seconds, apparently. But you talk about how they're maybe deceiving themselves. You talk about the AP findings, and you say at HuffPo, the headline was black voter turnout rate passes whites in 2012 election. The Daily Caller says, report, 2004 turnout numbers would have elected Romney. So, you know, as you say, you invite them to go back in time and be nostalgic for a place where, right, all they need, as you say, just nominate someone who can crank up the white community and their problem is solved, right?
Well, there will undoubtedly be people within the Republican Party who will make that argument, you know, and we'll see this play out over the next few weeks on Capitol Hill as they go toward a vote on the immigration bill. And I suspect it'll probably pass because I think Republicans probably feel, more Republicans than not, probably feel that they need to, you know, do that if they kill this bill, then and they're finished with Latinos for another generation.
Yeah.
But I don't think a majority of Republicans are going to support it, especially in the House. You might get a majority of Republicans in the Senate, maybe, but you're not gonna, I don't think you're going to get anything close to a majority in the House.
Right. Well, because you already have them screaming because of Boston, that because of a couple of Chechen doofuses, you've got to keep, you know, got to make sure no more Mexicans come in. I mean, it makes no sense, right?
Yeah, exactly. So now, so I would bet today by about 60-40 that it'll pass, because it'll get virtually all Democratic votes, and then in the House it'll just need a smallish number of Republican votes. But even so, if, you know, there are what, 230 something Republicans, I mean, if 40 Republicans in the House vote for that bill and 190 vote against, that still presages a pretty intense debate within the Republican Party about how far they should go down that road, you know?
Mm-hmm. My favorite part of your piece on this, and it's always hard to pick a favorite, but when you talk about, you know, the voter suppression efforts across the country, you say, do Republicans really think black and brown people won't notice all of this? You say Republicans don't actually talk to black people. Well, they talk to black Republicans, but that's sort of like evangelicals talking to Jews for Jesus and thinking they've gauged Jewish opinion, so they have no way of knowing how disingenuous they look. If you're only talking to Michael Steele and Larry Elder, you probably are missing.
I wrote that. That's pretty good.
Yeah, isn't that awesome? but yeah, I mean, you know, and you close with the point you made earlier. Republican Party is thus more officially racist than it was in Nixon's day. And you say at least they had Jackie Robinson and Sammy Davis Jr. back then, and they did things by a code, as you say, and not the law, right?
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember Sammy Davis's very controversial embrace of Nixon in the 1972 campaign, so I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah.
A funny point.
But I mean,
yes, these are official policies of the Republican Party all over the country, and they're very clearly racist in intent.
Well, as you say, it was not so brazen as to think it could on one hand be waging efforts in half the states to keep black people from voting, and on the other hand be improving its quote unquote outreach. You know, so as you say, even when if the black vote dips when Obama retires, if Republicans keep insisting on these tactics, you know, they're going to keep losing by the same margin in the black vote, right?
Maybe not quite the same margin, but you know, they'll never crack 10%. Of course, they'll get a lot of black entertainers up there on the stage at the convention, so you know that'll make up for everything.
Yes, it's always the hardest job is the cameraman at the Republican convention when someone mentions minorities, trying to find one in the crowd. You can almost feel the white knuckle panic. Yeah, I think even back when George Bush was in, I remember a statistic. Remember, didn't he have 2% approval rating with black voters, which we were saying is in the margin of error. So
yeah, right. Which is, you know, functionally zero.
Right, which raised the possibility of black people that maybe poltergeists or the unborn that hated him as well. Michael Tomosky, what a pleasure. You know, I'm going to pester you endlessly now.
Sure.
Come back on this.
You know where to get me.
You have fed the puppy now. All right. I'm going to follow you home.
Great.
Thanks, right, Michael. Talk to you again soon.
Okay.
All right, there he goes. Michael Tomosky.
Hooray!
Yay! Another dream comes true. 18 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I got her number up the men's room stall. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
Hmm. 23 minutes after the hour. The point you made to Chris Cluey, we just proved during the commercial break. You said the workplace, the least sexy place.
Yes.
What was our exchange? You're like, do you need anything? I'm like, not from you.
Yeah. And I said, I'm the very, very last person to provide you with what you need.
In any way, 1-800-STEP-1, phone number, toll free from anywhere. Christopher in Minneapolis on Chris Cluey. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Mama. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I'm fantastic, Derek. Listen, I just have a quick quote, quick point about Chris. You're absolutely correct. We love Chris here in Minnesota. We don't want to see him go anywhere. I'm a longtime season ticket holder.
Yeah.
But not only is Chris statistically the best kicker in Vikings history, but he's also the highest paid kicker in Vikings history.
Oh.
And I think it's jumping the gun to think that they may be doing this because of his outspokenness on equal rights. I hope that I'm right about that.
No, Chris. Chris, you raise a valid business point. However, you know, a couple of the Vikings management have spoken out about his outspokenness and his activism. You know,
absolutely.
And so it makes you suspicious.
Oh, it's hard to not be suspicious, and you know, I will be calling the team immediately, and I will rescind my season tickets if that's the reason that they're going to get rid of me.
Come on!
I won't support the team.
Well, they won't say that, but when you have the the punting coach saying stuff like, "Oh, I wish he'd focus on his punting," it's like, well, he is number one. He's even above his career average the last two seasons, and
exactly, he's a rock star. There's no question of it.
Right, and he says they haven't even talked to him about this, and then this punting coach said, "Oh, well, you know, I haven't talked. He won't listen." It's like, do you know someone won't listen unless you talk to them?
Yeah.
Well,
do they ever
talk
to you before they fire you, Stephanie?
No.
This is Danny Bonaduce shows up and
yeah, exactly.
No.
That's going to be on my gravestone. She did not see that coming. I never see anything coming.
Yeah, in radio they never tell
you. See it coming.
No,
Arnold.
You don't get a briefing telling you that someone's
yes.
planning.
You never get a final 2 days to broadcast.
No, well they did that one time and
they
lived to regret it. Arnold, North Carolina, would you like a final show to be gracious? Sure. Hello,
good morning,
Arnold.
Mama.
Hi,
how
Arnold.
You doing this morning?
Good. Go ahead.
Listen, Steph, with your conversation you just had with the last gentleman who visited your show this morning about the vote that's going on, the suppression of the black vote that's going on,
yep,
is very true and very timely. In my state, we have a supermajority of Republicans just got in there. Now we got a governor who's a Republican there, and they're passing all kind of crazy rules.
Yep.
The civil rights leader of the state, Reverend William Barbie, just got out of jail for civil disobedience, trying to go up against this strong thing, this strong wave of voter suppression. But, Steph, there, on your show again, I'm going to peak my vow, and you know my vow. Before I ever vote for a Republican, I would rather slide down a 50-foot razor blade into a cool tub of alcohol.
Ouch! Ow! All right. Thank you, Arnold.
Say that,
appreciate
that.
All right. All right. At least he's a man of principles.
Ow!
Okay, let's go. That made us all snap our sphincters shut.
Yes, it did.
Doinks.
Oh.
Teresa in Staten Island. You're on the Staten Island. Hey, Teresa.
Hey, Steph. Hi, crew.
Good. I just have I have working girl flashbacks whenever I say Staten Island.
Go ahead. It's Staten Island. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was watching a segment of 60 Minutes a while back, and they had this guy on named Frank Luntz.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm sure you're familiar.
Yes.
With him. And he was, like, giving rules as to what words they should use and what words they shouldn't use. And he's the main reason I think the Republican Party has been so successful, because they will take affordable care and make it into Obamacare. And if you ask someone, a Republican, do you want Obamacare, they'll say no. But if you ask them if they want affordable care, they will say yes.
Is the president for it? Yes. Well, then I'm against it. That's exactly what it is.
Exactly. And they put Obama on, they say Obamacare, and it automatically turns a person against it.
Yeah.
And they have even disparaged liberals so badly that I just call myself a progressive.
Yeah. Well, you know? I mean, and that's why we took back that word with the Sexy Liberal Show, because screw yous. You're not going to make it a dirty word for me. Ha! All right. By the by, the president was talking about, because of course he got, I think, pretty combative questions, and because they talked about it, they asked him about how come the Obamacare is not being implemented, blah, blah, blah. He said, you've got half of Congress who's determined to try to block implementation and not adequately funding implementation. He also said there's Republican governors who know it's bad politics for them to implement it effectively.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is, as the caller was just saying, it's anti-Obama. That's all it is. He said, I cannot force Republicans to embrace common sense solution. I can urge them to. I can put pressure on them. I can rally the American people around these common sense solutions. But ultimately, they themselves are going to have to say, we want to do the right thing, which will happen right after hell freezes over. Uh-huh. All right. Rugby star, Australian rugby star turned actor Ian Roberts.
Bonza.
Right, was the first player ever to come out.
First professional athlete to ever come out.
Yeah. Yep. We'll talk to him next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Most guys don't have the balls to go after
Stephanie Miller,
despite our reputation for being naughty.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Well, obviously, a lot of talk around the world about Jason Collins coming out, being the first professional American athlete to come out. However, he's way ahead of us, really, in time zones and every other way. Australian rugby star turned actor Ian Roberts is in Australia, where it is insane
o'clock.
It's
tomorrow.
It's 12:30 in the morning.
It's literally tomorrow.
Yeah.
Good morning, Ian. Thanks so much for taking time for us.
It's lovely to be here, Stephanie. Thank you.
Wow. We are way behind. The rest of the world's way ahead of us. You came out in 1995, right?
Yeah, I actually came out in the Advocate magazine, which is an American gay magazine, but that was followed up quickly, obviously, by the Australian press, and yeah, so that's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
And what was it like for you? And this must be something to watch this 18 years later, to look at this happening in America for the first time, huh?
I think it's fantastic. I mean, everyone's got their own story and their own journey, and it's not for anyone else to say when the right time is to do it. I mean, there's never a right time or a wrong time. It's just it's whenever someone's feeling good enough about themselves to take that step. I think for me, years ago, I'd always been really comfortable being gay all my life, and even though I was playing a professional team sport, me being gay was probably the worst kept secret in rugby. The Australian press were really kind to me. They never asked me about my private life all the time I was a professional player, even though it was widely known that I was gay. It just in 95 I was asked the question by the Advocate, and I just said, yeah, I'm gay. So it wasn't a real issue for me that way, and the Australian public were fantastic. There was no negativity. It was great.
Wow. I was going to say, interesting, because, obviously there's also that, not just rugby, but even Australian, there is that kind of rugged masculine image that we have. But, I mean, it sounds like they're a lot farther ahead than we are in America on this issue then.
I'd like to say that, but it's, I mean, politically we're not really. I mean, the U.S. is moving on same-sex marriage and equality here. Australia's still lagging very much in that area, which saddens me. But it's things like what Jason's done here. I also think now with multimedia and just the availability of all the social networks, there's a lot more out there, and it's much more accepted. It's just, and younger people don't seem to have the problem that that definitely younger people had when I was, 15, 20 years ago. It's there's more of it on TV.
How did your Ian? How did your life change, or did it when you came out? What was it like for you?
As I said, it was the worst kept secret in rugby, so nothing really changed for me. I've been taking my partner to all the functions and socially for a long time before I came out publicly. So nothing really changed for me that way. I was representing Australia at the time. That continued. I went on to captain my club team as a gay man. Like I said, it didn't bear. Well, I think the negatives most people would assume that it may carry with it.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody said to us yesterday that there's two kinds of coming out. There's wow and duh. sounds like you were a duh.
Yeah, very much. Well, you know, I love the expression. Yeah.
You know, I'm actually looking at a piece on Salon.com on Jason Collins coming out, Ian, and it says, you know, the risk of reducing one man's major life decision to a sociology experiment, Collins is the test case everyone has been waiting for, at least here in America, right? Collins forces a discussion about all the hypotheticals that have been bandying about for the last few years. How will players deal with a gay teammate in the locker room? How will fans feel about rooting for him? Will the insertion of an out gay athlete in the American sports mainstream change the discourse about gay rights? What do you think about all that in terms of how it's going to play out here?
It's interesting. I mean, I've been living in LA now for like 3 years. I'm actually just back in Sydney for a month to see family. But
by the way, I know that because my producer Travis said, "Have you seen the picture of Ian? He goes to my gym." And I was, I said, "Let me guess, smoking hot, right?"
That's very good for ego. Thank you. You know, the whole thing. I mean, when I first came out, I mean, there were some players that were uncomfortable with my presence in the locker room at times. But I mean, you know, my whole attitude today is, I mean, don't flatter yourself. It's almost like, you know, like we're mature grown people here. You're always going to have that type of element. But I think anyone who's at the stage where they're out publicly and talking openly about their sexuality, it's kind of moved beyond that anyway. So,
well, I mean, I would think that's what I was saying yesterday about Jason Collins, is you think, well, you know, they'd have to realize, oh, I've been showering with a gay guy for, you know, how many years and he hasn't hit on me. You know.
Totally. I mean, it's almost like I think gay men or gay people are just, you know, we're sex starved and craved and yeah, it's almost ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. Ian, tell me what are you working on acting wise? I didn't realize you were here in L.A.
I've been doing some stuff for the Sci-Fi Channel, but as of the 14th, I'm like 90% of the other actors in L.A. I'll be unemployed again.
and yet you'll be employed again because you're smoking hot and awesome. Thanks so much for taking time for us. We appreciate
it. My pleasure.
It. All right.
I'll see
you on the bench press.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. There he goes. And yet the question remains, Jim, what the heck is rugby? Okay.
But you've never
it's
seen
like
rugby?
American football. I know, I've seen I just don't know
this. It's kind of like American football.
It's sort of like the predecessor to American football.
Yeah,
it's
right.
More
a lot of lateral passing
though.
And no pads. So right. Pretty much everybody has a mangled nose.
Yeah. But American football is heavily
not Ian
regimented.
Roberts from Ian, from what I can see.
His nose has been broken. You can tell.
It doesn't matter. Still hot.
It gives him a rugged look, if you will.
I believe Travis, when he saw his picture, said, "Howley Darley."
Exactly.
All right. Play a sack of the save. And now, mistake.
We were talking about the president's press conference. I just found the questioners somewhat combative, especially when you're basing your premise on well-known Southern belle Lindsey Graham's latest paper.
Oh, my stars.
Lindsey Graham says. He also, one questioner asked, do you still have the juice to get the rest of your agenda through this Congress? Really? Isn't that a certain prism to look at things? And not that these are the most intransigent, intractable bunch of douches we've ever had in the Congress? So really, it's the president's lack of juice that's the reason we're not getting anything done. He said, if you put it that way, maybe I should just pack up and go home. Golly.
Golly.
Oh, I find him adorable.
And of course, someone quoted that directly. Oh, they actually said, he actually said he's going to pack up and go home.
Yeah, right. So rumors of my demise may be a little exaggerated at this point. You know, and I thought that it really was a great smackdown about the whole Boston thing and Lindsey Graham when he, you know, just said that he's wrong on this. It's like, really? Oh, national security has deteriorated under my watch?
Yeah.
I mean, we discussed this last hour, but really? We had the worst security failure in our history, and George Bush still didn't catch the guy that did it on his watch, and two doofuses do something, you know, off the Internet that is not part of it, and the Russians don't share the actual intelligence with us, and it's deteriorated.
Well, what about Benghazi? My stars.
We'll always have Benghazi.
Okay, the president on
the question then is, was there something that happened that triggered radicalization and an actual decision by the brother to engage in the attack that we, the tragic attack we actually saw in Boston. And are there things, additional things that could have been done in that interim that might have prevented it?
Except I'm announcing now I am appointing Tom Cruise so that he can find out who will commit crimes in the future. Right. Seriously, the FBI interviewed him. How are they supposed to know one doofus that learned something off the Internet is going to do something when he's not part of a larger network or plot or anything like that, particularly when the Russians didn't share everything that they actually knew about the conversations with a, you know,
it doesn't,
Zubidat.
It's a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know.
Exactly, because we were on a need-to-know basis.
Need-to-know.
Exactly. And they just said need to telling us all the details.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. All right, the president...
Based on what I've seen so far, the FBI performed its duties. Department of Homeland Security did what it was supposed to be doing. But this is hard stuff.
Yeah, just a little. And the president, one more time about the attack. And
is there, in fact, additional protocols and procedures that... could be put in place that would further improve and enhance our ability to detect a potential attack. And we won't know that until that review is completed.
By the way, I don't know if you noticed at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I'm glad that the president took it to Maureen Dowd. Charlie Pierce and I talked about how irritating this article was. Obama took note of a column by Maureen Dowd who criticized the White House for not deploying pit bull legislative aides to secure votes as fictional president played by Michael Douglas had done in the movie The American President. Trust me, no one wants the world to be more like the American president than me.
Because we need more sand.
But right. Obama, right. I think that's the one thing we can all agree on.
Because we don't know the difference.
Exactly. My point, Jim. Obama joked, Michael, what's your secret, man? Could it be that you were an actor in an Aaron Sorkin liberal fantasy? Thank you. We talked to Hot Breed and Melissa Fitzgerald about this. They were saying, well, some people go, oh, why isn't it like the West Wing? Because it's not written by Aaron Sorkin. The Republicans don't get their lines from Aaron Sorkin. They're douche nozzles. Duh. Okay. 45 minutes after the hour. I'm in a state today.
You are. You need some smelling salts and a fanning couch?
Yes, I haven't even gotten started on the Plan B thing yet.
You need some pearls around your neck.
Woo! Okay, 45 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the dirtiest show I have ever been on in all of my life.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Do it! It is...
Nothing.
No. Don't do that. Too early in the morning.
Fine! It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 50 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. All right. Oh, sexy liberal Hal Sparks on the phone. He's in somewhere. Where is he?
Kansas!
What is the matter
with Kansas?
Nothing, now that Hal Sparks is there. We will talk to him. Speaking of which, we got a love letter from Sexy Liberal Chicago, which was just three weeks ago? Marion, this is what the Sexy Liberal family is about, and I say all this for a reason. I'll get to that point in a moment. But Marianne wrote and said, Steph, I'm fortunate enough to be able to meet you guys after the Chicago Sexy Liberal. Speaking with you, John, and Hal, amazing experience because you all hold a very special place in my heart. I mentioned to you my best friend Ernie lost his battle with pancreatic cancer last year. He first introduced me to your radio show, and we spent our lunch hours listening to your podcast. We both were at Sexy Liberal last year in Chicago. We were unable to afford meet and grope, though. We hung out at the end to catch a glimpse of you, and Ernie was convinced you smiled at him. It made his night, and he talked about that for months afterwards. As a tribute to him and a treat to me, I made sure to get meet and grope this time because I really wanted to be able to thank you in person, blah, blah, blah. You, John, and Hal were also very kind, meant so much to me. That night was one of the greatest nights of my life. Although I no longer get to enjoy the podcast with my best friend by my side, by listening to them every day, it made me feel close to him. Laughter helps ease me through the tough times. Thanks to John and Hal, all three of you totes adorbs. Marianne, she made me cry again. She told me that story in person. We both cried, and now she made me cry again. But I will tell Hal and John. I will tell Hal in just a moment. But anyway, that's what the sexy liberal family is like. It's awesome people like that, including Macaroni, the official rapper of the Stephanie Miller Show.
She likes Steph. Yeah. Teach me how to sexy.
Yeah.
I'm kind of rough and my hair kind of messy.
That's right.
My pants are cuff and my shirt kind of scruffy. I need help, mama. Please, you told me that you love me.
I do.
She said, yo, you a sexy liberal. She gave me 2 tickets front row to the show. Said, I love how you do your thing with John Pugel saying. How Sparks get more booty than Booty Tang.
Ooh, all right. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. All right. He's got a bunch of those. So now we need to help him. Macaroni writes, Steph, I'm trying to win a Netroots Nation scholarship so I can take my rap activism to the next level. As you know, I'm a rapper, also an activist. I use my music to try to promote and educate my community, anybody else who will listen on liberal issues. He does awesome stuff, if you've ever seen it. You guys have done so much for my music by sharing it with your audience. I hate to ask for another favor, but like my real mama says, closed mouth, don't get fed.
Okay.
That's a good one, Mama Macaroni. Good one. Good one. So I'm asking my radio mama for some help. Currently going to Netroots Nation for a scholar. I want need a scholarship so I can go to San Jose to the conference to get educated by and meet some great progressives. They're having a contest. The top 5 automatically go to San Jose for Netroots Nation.
Right.
Time of this writing, I'm number 10 out of 100. I'm so close. Do you guys think you can give me a shout-out? Shout-out.
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 So he's a raptivist.
Right. Exactly. Maybe post a link on Facebook. We did that. I'll take anything I get. I know step heads and sexy liberals can take me over the top. Voting ends May 7th. This week is the final stretch. I really appreciate your help and promise to represent all my sexy liberal family. Wolfpack, an organization he volunteered, they're trying to get the Citizens United turned around so we can get dirty money out of politics.
Yeah.
They have given him his own special link at votewolfpack.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go to there. Vote for Macaroni.
Or just go to the Stephanie Miller Show Facebook page, and the link is right there.
Click on the link right there.
Yep.
And vote for Macaroni, the official rapper of the Stephanie Miller Show. Sorry about that, young MC. Okay.
Was it Young MC?
Yes,
it was Young
yes.
MC.
Yes, I dumped him like yesterday's news. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Well, Young MC has only called him once.
Well, Jim made a joke about that he's not so Young MC anymore, and he was listening. He lives in Phoenix, and he called.
Yeah.
And see how fickle I am?
Because we played some of his.
Then Macaroni did stuff for me. Boom.
And apparently you went to USC with Young MC.
Apparently I did. I don't even remember I went to USC at this point. I'm so old. Davin in Washington, D.C., you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Davin.
Hey, how are you, Stephanie?
Good. Good. Go ahead.
I was just calling because I heard the piece earlier about the voter ID laws. You know, I was just wondering, why do Republicans think that us liberals can't see through this? You know, African Americans and my Latinos can't see through this, you know, this facade that they put up. You know, they tell their constituents, you know, we're doing this to stop illegal immigrants from voting, but why would an illegal immigrant take that risk to try to vote, knowing that, you know, they may risk being exposed, you know, and then deported back to where they came from?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, the argument is so flimsy, and the Republican Party's history is really, you know, starting with Nixon and his Southern strategy, and then the Republicans, they say that the Southern strategy never existed, but Ken Melman in 2005 at the NAACP banquet apologized for it. So, I mean, why would he apologize for something that didn't exist?
Yeah, thank you.
You know?
Yes. He also apologized for the unfortunate gay bashing that took place in the was it the 2004 election cycle? But whatever.
Yeah.
Little late, but we'll take it. Yeah, that is the. It seems like you're underestimating the greatest threat, and that is illegal immigrants that can read upside down that are trying to impersonate Chris Lavoie in order to vote.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Are you gotten over your voter ID stuff yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Haven't you got the memo? I've changed my mind on that.
Good. Okay.
I changed it a couple of years ago.
I think I beat it out of you.
No, you didn't beat it out of me. I thought carefully about it.
Thank you. You thought carefully about whether
you're fired
or not. Okay, the president and the reporter I was talking about at the press conference.
Do you still have the juice to get the rest of your agenda through this Congress?
Well, if you put it that way, Jonathan, maybe I should just pack up and go home. Golly. You know, I think it's a little, as Mark Twain said, you know, rumors of my demise may be a little exaggerated. At this point, I feel confident that the bipartisan work that's been done on immigration reform will result in a bill that passes the Senate, passes the House, and gets on my desk.
I think that there are plenty of Jews who support this president. But that's... I misinterpreted it.
Jews. Mm-hmm. Juice.
Oh, by the way, remember we were talking about that mother that wanted...
Yeah, you have the juice. What did I say?
Remember that we talked about the mother yesterday that wanted the Anne Frank's diary removed from her daughter's curriculum because of the part where...
The naughty bits.
The naughty part where Anne talks about discovering her naughty bits.
Yes.
Stephen in Chicago asked Jim, do you know who else was trying to suppress Anne Frank's diary?
Yeah, right.
All right.
You don't even need to say it.
All right. Everybody just fill it in your thought bubble.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Sheila in New York. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Sheila.
Hey.
Hey.
So I'm the official portable pole of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hello.
Because, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And because today's my birthday, May 1st, and I'm Polish. And I just want to tell you guys.
You're a maypole.
Birthday, I'm a maypole,
yeah, exactly.
Yes. I just want to tell you guys how much I love you.
Aww.
And how you make fill what can sometimes be dark days full of joy.
Aw, thank you. Happy, happy, joy, joy to you too, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. There she is, the portable pole. Moving again. 58 minutes after the hour, we have sexy liberal Hal Sparks.
Yep.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will talk about the Plan B. Oh, don't get me started. Really?
No,
I have the vapors. All right, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere, stephaniemiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there, executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Oh, looky here. We've been doing statistics all morning. First of all, as you know, you were wrong, and I was right about...
Well, I know nothing about American football.
Well, then shut your pothole.
Pothole?
That's what Melissa Fitzgerald's nephew calls it, so we're just going to change
it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right, because we were saying that he has actually been better the last 2 years statistically. He is the best, puncher in Minnesota Vikings history,
mm-hmm.
And he's been better. He's better than average the last 2 years, so he's not gotten anyway. And watching you, Minnesota Vikings, if he gets cut because of being so such an outspoken straight ally of the gay community, I say hooray. I talked to him earlier, and I'm still in my afterglow. So leave me alone.
You talked to two hunky sports guys,
right? Oh, speaking of sports-related statistics, would you like some fun facts?
Sure.
Just for the heck of it. Scott says, I worked South Florida ratings. You know, we used to have a station in Miami.
Yes.
I worked in South Florida radio for 30 years. Thought you'd get a kick out of seeing what happened to WINZ, which used to be Steph's station. We did very well there. The station
mm-hmm.
did very yeah. well there, very well in Miami. You'll have to scroll down to the very bottom. It now has a 0.2 share. There it is. Nothing like watching something fail after you leave. There it is. Wow. Very last.
Very last
station in the market.
That seems like a really dumb business decision.
Wow. Good luck to yous. Okay. Speaking of, these are not so fun facts,
right.
but some, and this is why, wow, look at Travis, Eddie Haskell out there supplying me with the embassy bombing statistics. All right. Just kidding. Okay. I was mentioning, because I had to go on CNN yesterday,
yeah.
and because Lindsey Graham says something, it becomes the topic.
Right.
Let's talk about the president's Benghazi problem. The president has a Benghazi problem. What do you think about the president's Benghazi problem? Whatever.
Whatever.
Okay.
He's been eating too much broccoli? He has a gassy problem? What? Sorry? What?
Well, I thought
the
president's two snaps up in a circle, because it was like, Lindsey Graham says that national security has deteriorated under your watch.
Mr. Graham is not right on this issue, although I'm sure it generated some headlines. I think that what we saw in Boston was state, local, federal officials, every agency, rallying around a city that had been attacked, identifying the perpetrators just hours after the scene had been examined. We now have one individual deceased, one in custody. Charges have been brought.
So, complete failure.
Yes.
Yes, right.
Exactly. Meanwhile, I mentioned on CNN yesterday about, you know, how often did this happen under Bush? And did you ever, it's because literally Lindsey Graham and John McCain live in the green room and meet the press.
Yeah.
This is like Bengal, and then there's like, oh, there's a cover-up. And because Victoria Tansing, some Republican attorney, said, oh, they're obstructing the investigation into Benghazi.
What was she famous for before? I know that she was in the news.
Yeah,
I'll think of it. I know what you mean. She's a very partisan attorney. She's anyway. Patrick in L.A. Writes, Steph, where was all the concern? He's talking about embassy bombings under Bush. Where was all the concern for our men and women serving in embassies and consulates across the globe when all the other attacks and killings occurred? Like in 2002 when the U.S. consulate in Karachi, Pakistan was attacked and 10 were killed.
Mm-hmm.
Like in 2004, when the U.S. Embassy in Uzbekistan was attacked and 2 were killed, another 9 injured. Or in 2004, when the U.S. 2004, the U.S. consulate in Saudi Arabia was stormed and 8 people lost their lives. There's more. In 2006, armed men attacked the U.S. Embassy in Syria. 1 was murdered. 2007, grenade thrown at the U.S. Embassy in Athens. In 2008, U.S. Embassy in Serbia set on fire. 2008, bombings at the U.S. Embassy in Yemen killed 10. Notice all the dates, all before the Obama administration. Tell that to Lindsey Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Although that would just make him permanently on the fainting couch.
Yeah, but then I bombed the wrong country. Welcome, America.
Victoria Tansing was involved in the Valerie Plame situation.
Oh,
right. Yeah, she filed an amicus brief saying that Valerie Plame's cover couldn't have possibly been blown by Scooter Libby.
Okay, here's well-known Southern Belle Lindsey Graham.
It's not so much about blaming people as to get it right.
Yes.
We've all stayed Americans for 7 months, 4 overseas, 4 at home. Bin Laden's dead. Radical Islam is on the march. We need to up our game. Clearly to me, the systems did not work the way they're supposed to. I'm shocked that this happened after 9/11, where people no longer talk to each other. I thought we'd gotten over that.
I'm shocked that we didn't arrest everybody wearing a baseball cap with a backpack. We should have known. Should look in your crystal ball and say,
okay,
there's some bad, bad boys out there.
Okay. So two doofuses learned to use a kitchen appliance off the internet. They're not connected to a larger terrorist plot. Russia doesn't share all the intelligence with us that they have. And it's,
clearly
I love that.
He started,
it's not about blaming people. That being said, it's the black guy's fault.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say that.
Oh, speaking of racist birthers, Travis says, please, that we've been offered Donald Trump.
Computer says no.
Really?
No.
Thanks. I've heard
It'd
enough
huge.
Of his thoughts.
It'd be huge.
It'd be huge, that book.
I have huge thoughts.
Thanks
they're
for
all
that.
Wrong, but they're huge.
Thanks for that, Travis. But if you book him?
You're fired.
Okay. Aaron in Ann Arbor, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Steph. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just kind of stunned, you know, how I really wonder, is there anything that Obama could do that would cause you to turn on him?
Well, sure. Would you like to argue hypotheticals? Someone wrote me the other day and said that I would defend him if he blew up an orphanage. And that would be untrue.
No, my usual claim about people that have your, what I consider your view on things, would be like as they, you know, as Obama is using his dictatorial powers, you know, under the NDAA, under the Bush executive orders that were never rescinded, that if he was dragging you guys away into the gulag, you know,
Gulag?
Okay, would have caused me to turn against President Obama if he were to drag me away to a gulag.
To a gulag, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, I have criticized him for the drone strikes. That there were a lot of, like, you know, yes, we got some bad guys, but every time we kill innocent civilians, we create more bad guys. So
okay, and I have defended drone strikes because I think they are preferable to illegal and unnecessary wars. But all right, go ahead, Aaron.
I hope you're willing to delve into that. Let's talk about the legitimacy of drone strikes to get bad guys. Other than, Anwar al-Awlaki or whatever his name is.
Other than him, that's the only good drone we've ever sent.
Okay, now listen. Oh. Out of the, 20,000 or so drones, do you know a single name of any other intended target?
Of course not, and neither do you. Aaron, do you... Okay. All right. Do you think the president is going to drag us to the gulag? Do you think the president's going to drag us to the gulag?
No, I don't want, what I want is a legitimate intellectual discussion, not a subversion technique to try and drag me off onto a tangent so that you suppress the truth anytime the truth is to the left of you. Can I actually say what I'm trying to say rather than...
I'm suppressing it, the truth, because it's to the... Okay, all right. You know what? Fortunately, my good, happy, clappy friend is here. We have located him in Kansas.
Steffi,
Kansas. Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be? Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Yes! Yes!
You're my knight in shining armor for saving me from that man, Hal Sparks.
I'm sorry I missed the beginning part of it. So, run me down. So he was convinced that you were trying to use other techniques in conversation to get him off of his point. Did you play a fart sound? I missed that part. Was it a fart?
Apparently I will be defending the president even when he is dragging you and I off to the gulag. Apparently is coming.
Oh. That's, I see, because, of the right to kill an American on American soil that Eric Holder said absolutely was not legal unless that person was in active, was actively involved in a violent act against, the country.
Right. Right. Exactly my point.
And that guy's hero, Rand Paul, just said it'd be cool if he was walking out of a liquor store with a gun and $50 and never mentioned whether the guy had stolen it or anything. That's the fun part.
Yeah.
Did you ever notice that about what Rand Paul said? He never actually said.
Are you saying Ron Paul, Ron Paul or Rand?
Rand.
Rand.
Oh, okay.
Rand, when he doubled back on his, his drone strikes thing.
Yeah.
He said, I don't care if they use it for a guy coming out of a liquor store with $50 in his hands and a gun. Well, that's half the people in Texas. That doesn't mean that guy didn't steal anything. He just is cool with killing those people. The point is that this is not the concern they think it is, but it's a great conflation device.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I actually have to take off because I have a gig, so I'm glad Hal is here. To cover for me, and I got a ski down.
All right.
So,
all right. Well, you'll be sorely missed, Jim, and I'll try to do the best Yertle the Turtle I can.
all right, Hal Sparks, can you hang on?
I can.
All right, Hal Sparks holds on with us as we continue. It is Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Uh-huh.
You want me to do this here? I'm going to do it when I come back.
Okay,
all right. Thank you so much. Back with Hal Sparks next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
One minutes after the hour, sexy liberal Hal Sparks rejoins us. Hello, Hal Sparks.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hello.
I was saying, I've been saying all morning how irritating it is. I was on CNN yesterday because Lindsey Graham says something, then it becomes a topic. Let's talk about the president's Benghazi problem. And it,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, get ready for that to become more of a topic along with drone strikes, too, on the right, since he's going after closing Gitmo again. And it's more, the closing of it is more popular now than it was then.
Thank you. So, and listen, take a listen. This is the president yesterday. I'm glad you brought that up. Here's the president talking about Gitmo yesterday.
I'm going to go back at this. I've asked my team to review everything that's currently being done in Guantanamo, everything that we can do administratively, and I'm going to reengage with Congress to try to make the case that this is not something that's in the best interest of the American people.
Well, Hal, as you and I, as well-known Obama apologists always say, here, our friends on the left go, see, he promised he closed Gitmo and he didn't do it. Well, it's because he couldn't. I mean, once again, here's an issue where some Democrats abandoned him as well, right?
On my Saturday show, I read the executive order out loud. It's easy. You can go to whitehouse.gov and read it, the one that he actually signed and sent to Congress. You know why Gitmo's not closed? Because there were senators and House Republicans who were against the transfer, who literally would not appropriate the funds to transfer the people at Gitmo to the states, period. That's why.
Yeah.
They have to stay there until you can pay to get them moved. And they eliminated that payment.
Hal, and it's the same lack of courage, you know, on the part of some Democrats even that led to background checks failing in the Senate, right?
And that's done really great by their polling numbers. So there's that, you know.
Yeah.
There's a 12 to 15% drop in their polling numbers in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
This is, it's nice. This tide is turning. And especially with Gitmo, I think the awareness of the American people that he did sign an executive order to shut it down, and Congress not only stopped it at the time, but has been manufacturing reasons to delay it ever since.
Look at the tenor of the questions at this press conference yesterday. Hal, the reporter says, do you still have the juice to get the rest of your agenda through Congress rather than why is this Congress the most intransigent in history?
Oh, I get it. Juice, O.J., president is black, O.J. Simpson's black, we're all a giant white woman. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. Let's listen to the president one more time on Gitmo.
It is not a surprise to me that we've got problems in Guantanamo, which is why when I was campaigning in 2007 and 2008, and when I was elected in 2008, I said we need to close Guantanamo. I continue to believe that we've got to close Guantanamo. I think it is critical for us to understand that Guantanamo is not necessary to keep America safe. It is expensive. It is inefficient. It hurts us in terms of our international standing. It lessens cooperation with our allies on counterterrorism efforts. It is a recruitment tool for extremists. It needs to be closed.
I mean, Hal, this is exactly, he talked about, of course, they criticize him about Boston. It's like, well, really? We caught them within, 3 days? One's dead, one's in jail, based on incomplete intelligence from Russia, and yet it's still, they try to cast it as an Obama failure, right?
Right. Well, again, you have to take it in context, though, because those people who are throwing those criticisms think that if someone associated with Chechens in Russia attack you, then you should probably bomb Yugoslavia.
Right, or Crete.
Yeah, right. We should launch an attack on Greece immediately. It's going to get narrower and narrower. The truth is there are two areas where the Republicans normally have a huge lead, and that's, of course, immigration, because of Americans' fear of the march of Mexicans across the border to take their jobs, and national security. And they are losing on both fronts. The president both has more deportations than I think the last three presidents combined, probably, and yet is doing more to aid people who are trying to make a living here and trying to become American citizens. He's got them over a barrel that way. And the same thing applies to national security. Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, decimated. I'm sure it was shocking to these folks that this had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda, even remotely. As extremists as these guys thought they were being involved in, it wasn't even that they were attached to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
They're having a hard time. That's why we're going to be hearing a lot about Benghazi, because, there are a lot of people. I mean, it's YouTube frenzy. Right now what this is, it used to be we had to deal with the Tea Party faction of the Republican Party. We are now dealing with the YouTube faction.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Exactly. Hal, let's go.
People who don't.
Yeah, we got about a minute or so left, but obviously the big story, as someone gay adjacent and a straight ally for so many years, I mean, another huge thing in Jason Collins coming out this week, right?
Yeah, amazing. I think it's a great thing. I think it's funny, though, that I've heard repeatedly, the first professional athlete, and then there's all these things on the news, like the gay athlete or whatever. And I hear this kind of soft backpedal from other, news organizations that will say, the first of the major four sports, because never mind Billie Jean King or the occasional diver.
Virginia Navratilova,
Right, yeah, exactly. I think it's an amazing thing, especially in the world of basketball. And, the reality is that, they're saying the gay athlete, the out gay athlete. They should leave that word in there because there is a lot of them.
Yep. Yeah.
I won't go with majority, but it's close.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see if it. Do you think it's going to? Do you think this is going to open the door?
Absolutely.
For them?
Oh, no question. I mean, I think the response was a mature one for the most part. There, yet a couple of idiots, but that's that's the statistical average you're going to deal with in a country of 330 million people.
Yep.
So, you know, one ESPN host against every major sports star, you know, is odds I will take. That's a great thing.
There you go. We won that jump ball. All right. Hal Sparks, I love you. Say hello
love
to Kansas
you.
For us.
I will do.
All
okay.
right. Love you. All right. Nothing rather Kansas now.
That's right.
Hal Sparks is there, everybody. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I'm being cast in the role of bad girl, oddly titillating.
Yes, 34 minutes after the hour, we busted her out of the newsroom. We have a breaking news situation. Here she is. Hello, Jackie Schechner.
Good morning.
What's going on in Boston?
The police department tweeted out that they've got three more suspects. They've taken them into custody in the Marathon bombing case.
Three additional arrests is what they're saying. Do we have no idea who yet?
No, the Boston Globe is reporting that the three are students connected to Jahar Tsarnaev at UMass Dartmouth and helped him after the attack. But the only reports we're getting on that are from the Boston Globe so far. So we're just kind of waiting to hear on more details from official sources. But that's what they're saying.
Interesting. I mean, because one of them, of course, the first thing I thought of is Catherine Russell, Tamerlan's wife, because she's obviously under scrutiny after the female DNA was found on one of the parts of the bomb, right?
Right, but it looks like now what these three are students and what they're saying is that they allegedly helped him after the bombing. So I don't know what those official charges would be, and we're just waiting for the official information. But interesting that they pushed this out on Twitter just a few moments ago.
Yeah.
Now everybody's picking up and waiting for more detail.
Well, and plus they don't know about the female DNA, right? That's going through analysis. They're saying it could have even been a sales clerk who sold the pressure cooker. It could have been a victim. But,
well, I mean, they took DNA and fingerprints from Catherine Russell. But the developments on that part today is that the medical examiner in Massachusetts is ready to release Tamerlan Tsarnaev's body, and Catherine Russell doesn't want it. She wants his family to take it instead.
See, I'm just saying, what starts as a really dark comedy bit becomes true. But it is weekend at Tamerlan's at this point. Yeah, the uncle. She said she wants the uncle head is the one that first said this, right? The body has been at the medical examiner's office for more than a week. And so he says his family will get it now that his wife has agreed, right?
Yeah, I think she's got to release it. She's got to sign the forms to release it, and she doesn't want it. And so I think the family's going to take it because the parents are still in Russia.
Okay.
So they're not able to claim it.
And presumably take him water skiing. And,
yeah.
in a convertible with his mirrored sunglasses.
Right.
I don't want it. You take it. Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's just interesting. We'll see.
But, there's a good word for it.
Yeah. I mean, that's like this is pure speculation now, but I mean, in some ways you go, is that if she was involved, is that like a way to, you know, also cast suspicion away from her that, you know, she wants nothing to do with even the body?
I don't know. No. I mean, it's hard to speculate at this point. You'd think that if she didn't know anything about it, she'd be mortified and not want anything to do with it. And if she did know something about it, then maybe there's some sort of intention behind it. But it's hard to know without knowing. And I certainly don't want to accuse somebody of being involved. It's entirely possible she had no idea. So
yeah.
I don't want to. It doesn't sound like they had a super tight relationship.
Let's just say. All right,
what are you doing down there? Nothing.
Nothing. You're not making bombs out of pressure cookers, right? No.
No.
Looking at porn. No, don't worry. So the other big story I wanted to talk to you about is obviously the morning after pill. The government is moving the morning after pill over the counter.
Mm-hmm.
Any reason in particular you want to talk to me about this?
No reason. No reason.
Not suggesting anything at all.
It's a little bit of a chick issue, and it's also a health...
heterosexual female friend? Is that what...
It's exactly. The official heterosexual female friend of the Stephanie Miller Show. But it's also, you know, I mean, it's a women's health issue, right? I mean, they're moving it over the counter, but only those 15 and older can buy it. Attempt to find middle ground just days before a court-imposed deadline to lift all age restrictions, which I think they should do. Don't you?
Yeah,
it's an emergency contraceptive. That's what it is. It's not an abortion pill.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this gets into a tricky conversation because I'm not so sure that you should be having sex that young.
Right. Well, of course. Right.
Anyway, you should save it till you're in love.
There's a little magical.
So romantical.
A little magical, romantical advice from Jackie.
Romantical. No, but I think it's tricky because, first of all, you've got young girls who may or may not have identification. If you don't have a driver's license at that age, I don't know that you would have the identification to show at the counter.
Exactly.
And that's a tricky thing for young girls to purchase, but it should be available and accessible. I just don't know that you should force a girl to have to show identification for it. I'm not so sure that that's the right way to go.
I mean, I'm just thinking when we were kids, like I didn't have ID, did you, until were 16 and had a driver's license?
I'm not a legal ID. I mean,
you might have had one for a school ID or something.
To buy hooch?
Yeah.
I always looked like 45, so I was always able to buy hooch without ID.
Yeah, I still get carded for everything.
Do you really?
I hate you.
Yeah, but I think it's just guys trying to make me feel good. I don't think it's actually legitimate.
I've been the victim of many a pity carding at supermarkets. They pity card you. I can tell. I've been carded.
For what?
For booze in the last few years. I'm like, bless your heart.
I was going to say, you don't need ID for Doritos. It's okay. You can just buy those.
No, I can tell. I can tell a pity carding. I'm like, please, come on.
It's when they say, ma'am. Can I see your ID, ma'am?
Yes, ma'am. Hey, Miss Daisy, before they drive you home, can I see some ID before you buy that hooch?
Before they drive you home from the Piggly Wiggly.
You want to buy some moonshine, honey?
Do your grandkids know you're out of the house?
Anyway, so Plan B is sold behind pharmacy counters now. The buyers must prove they're 17 or older to buy it without a prescription or else see a doctor first. So, and obviously a judge said earlier this month he blasted the Obama administration actually for imposing the age 17 limit, saying it had let election year politics trump science and was making it hard for women of any age to obtain the emergency contraception in time. This is obviously time sensitive, too. You need to take it right away.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, there's a very important fact, and I say this every time we talk about this, is it's not the abortion pill. It doesn't it doesn't terminate a pregnancy. It just stops the possibility of somebody getting pregnant if there's that possibility.
Yeah, and don't we want that, Jackie? That's exactly it. This is not encouraging girls that young to have sex. It's obviously saying that, who wouldn't want it? I mean, you would think that even if you are pro-life or pro-choice, you would be for this.
Well, yeah, but you also, it has to come with education, and that's what's the most important thing, is that when we give sex ed and we teach kids about their own sexual health, we need to teach that this is, obviously an option that's available should there be some sort of emergency situation, but it's not to be used. It shouldn't, I think, ethically sort of be used as a, went out and had unprotected sex, let me just use this.
Right. Well, I mean, the judge ordered an end to all age restrictions by Monday, so that's the fight here, is obviously a woman's group that sued over the age limit said the action's not enough. It'll continue the fight, the court fight if necessary. They said lowering the age limit may reduce delays for some young women, but does nothing to address the significant barriers that far too many women of all ages will still find if they arrive at the drugstore without ID.
Well, is it a comparable argument to say let's force young men under the age of 15 to show, or young men at the age of 15 to show ID they buy condoms? Is it comparable to say that? Because there's an embarrassment factor, it shouldn't be, but there's certainly an uncomfortableness to having to show identification when you go to purchase something personal like that. And I think if we're going to force young girls to show ID, then we should force young boys to do the same.
Listen, I'm still embarrassed to buy tampons. It's just they always have to do the price check over the public address system.
That's why God invented self-checkout.
Not that I know this personally, but no. At a drugstore, in some certain drugstores, there is that plastic barrier over the family planning section. So when you go to buy condoms or something like that, they have to open it for you. There's like a little alarm goes off.
Boop,
and,
boop, boop. Yeah. Someone needs to open the whore section. Someone who has the key to the whore section.
Pretty much. And then there's that moment when you're standing there and looking at someone else as you're both standing there waiting for them to open it.
What are you doing later? Oh, I already know.
Okay. You get lucky?
All right. Jackie Schechter, get back on that breaking news out of Boston. Thanks, honey.
Working on it. You got it, guys.
All right. All right. Bye. She will have more at the top of the hour. Yeah, one of the women's health groups said these are daunting and sometimes insurmountable hoops women are forced to jump through in time-sensitive circumstances. We will continue our battle in court to remove these arbitrary restrictions on emergency contraception for all women. Listen to these statistics. Half the nation's pregnancies every year are unintended.
Mm-hmm.
And doctors' groups say more access to morning after pills could cut those numbers. If taken within 72 hours of unprotected sex, they can cut the chances of pregnancy by up to 89%.
That's right.
But it works best if taken within the first 24 hours. So the FDA had been poised to lift all age limits and let Plan B sell over the counter in late 2011. It was actually Kathleen Sebelius who, in an unprecedented move, overruled her own scientists. Sebelius said some girls as young as 11 are physically capable of bearing children but shouldn't be able to buy the pregnancy-preventing pill on their own. President Obama basically was supporting Sebelius's move, but a caller said earlier, would I ever say something against the president? I think this was wrong. I agree with the women's groups. I understand the concerns, but I don't think it's encouraging. First of all, as Jackie said, it is not an abortion pill. Would you like the fun facts?
Yeah.
I know you're a little fuzzy on the whole lady bits. Let me explain.
What? I am not.
If a woman is already pregnant, the morning after pill has no effect. It's not an abortion pill, period.
I have a passing familiarity with the lady bits.
Sure, you do. It prevents ovulation or fertilization of an egg. According to the medical definition, pregnancy doesn't begin until a fertilized egg plants itself into the wall of the uterus.
Right.
Still, some critics say Plan B is the equivalent abortion pill because it may be able to prevent a fertilized egg from attaching to the uterus, a contention that scientists and the judge in his ruling have discredited.
Right.
It's just, I get that it's an emotional issue. It's not an abortion pill.
Right.
It's emergency contraception.
Right. But it's also a medication.
Right.
As opposed to a condom, which
right.
is not.
But the fact is, underage girls, that obviously there is a fear factor of telling their parents. So would you rather, I mean, that's what I would ask our anti-choice friends. Mm-hmm. Would you rather have her get pregnant because she can't get this and then have an abortion? I mean, to me, this prevents abortion, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just asking a medical question. Don't blame me. Okay. Jill in Ithaca, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Steph.
Hi.
Hey, Chris.
Hello.
Down the port there. Hi. Yeah, actually, I was on hold before Hal even brought up Guantanamo. And, yeah, it's a national disgrace. The president does have a little more power to do something. He can go through the Defense Department and write, you know, those people that are there, 86 out of, I think it's 166, have been cleared. They're just languishing, and now they're all on a hunger strike. We don't want
right.
people to die. They're force feeding them. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And, you know, if people want to call in the White House comment line, I have the number.
Okay.
Sure, go ahead.
202-456-1111. I've already, you know, of course, called it. But it's like, and some of those people are there because it's a witch hunt. Their neighbors
yeah.
turn them in.
Yeah. And it's foie gras, basically, is what you're saying. It's forced feeding, and it's, as the president said, he's not surprised we're having these problems. It is morally, ethically, legally untenable to have
Absolutely.
To hold these people forever. As you know, and Jill, the thing I always said, when, you know, Bush started this thing and then Romney said he would double down on, you know, double the size of Guantanamo, is, you know, as you're right, some of those people weren't terrorists. You know, they didn't hate us when they got there. Now they do.
No, and even the ones that are, you know, somewhat dangerous, they have to give them, you know, try them already. Try them. Let them know their fate. It's like,
yeah.
it's disgusting and it's un-American.
Yep, absolutely, Jill. All right. 46 minutes after the hour, back with the remaining moments of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 51 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. As Jackie just told us, the breaking news out of Boston. And this is a tweet from it's the Boston Globe saying three more suspects have been taken into custody
yeah.
in the marathon bombings. Roommates, they're saying.
They're saying roommates of Sarnev.
Which one? Which Sarnev? We don't know.
One of the Sarnevs.
Okay. And they don't know whether they helped them afterwards or...
Right. The Boston Globe is
yeah.
reporting that they're people that helped them after the...
After the, yeah.
The bombings. But that's the only news organization that's reporting that.
Okay. By the way, we have not discussed at length Ryson Guy, who is completely a doofus. He bought castor bean seeds off eBay.
Yeah.
Really? The
mm-hmm.
things that make ricin. Okay. So he, first of all, a dust mask and other items seized from his martial arts studio.
His dojo.
His dojo. tested positive. He's like the bully on Karate Kid.
I know.
Or no, the bully, not the blonde guy, the
not
the
Billy
adult
Zapka?
Bully, the adult bully.
Okay, yeah.
That owned the dojo in Karate Kid. It's that guy. So item seized at his dojo.
God.
Do you think when they came to get him, he did that swan thing that Karate Kid did? Go ahead, try to take me. They tested positive for ricin. Records seized by the FBI also showed that Everett Dutchke, ordered Dutchke. Castor bean seeds used to make ricin off of eBay.
Yeah, that's a good way to get on a watch list.
This is how you know he's guilty. Contacted by Reuters, Dutchke's attorney declined to comment.
Uh-huh.
Computer says no.
I got a
thing with the guy.
I love that his next-door neighbor, because normally, as I've said before on the show, next-door neighbors the stupidest people in the universe. Mass murderers' next-door neighbors are always the stupidest people. I didn't notice nothing. Seemed like a nice feller.
Kind of kept himself.
Okay, but this guy's neighbor, he's like, yeah, he did it. Guy, totally, I believe that.
That was hysterical.
That guy was odd. That guy's a... Soon after the seeds were delivered to Dutchke, whatever his name's, home address, someone using his laptop, who could it be? Downloaded a publication on safe handling and storage of the poison. See, he's like me. He doesn't know how to close his browser. That's why I could never commit any crime, because I'm so... There'd be an electronic trail. I'm an idiot. I'm a complete idiot.
The cops would just use go to my PC to watch you doing the research.
I can see you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Frank in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Wonderful. Well, I just wanted to comment about, you were talking earlier about Republicans and conservatives believing that the main reason so many African Americans turned out to vote was because Barack Obama was running, and of course he's African American.
In case you haven't noticed, he's black.
I'm sorry?
In case you haven't noticed, he's black.
In case you haven't noticed, he's black.
Exactly. Well, I'm African American too, and I actually like black better. But I wanted to point out the fact that, you know, it also is a very emotional issue for many of us. You know,
yes.
My mother grew up in East Texas, and all my life growing up, I'm 58, about to turn 59, all my life I heard the stories about how it was legal for her to vote, but the obstacles that they faced from the Ku Klux Klan when they wanted to vote. And right up until my mom died at the age of 86, she was absolutely passionate about voting. And there are many people who had gotten complacent, I think, over time and who had lost faith in the government. But the minute they heard that conservatives were working to take away the right to vote, that struck a chord with African-American people. And I don't think it mattered whether the person running was black or not.
Frank, that's what Mike Tomosky's piece is about that we talked to him about this morning, is that's exactly what I said, is they really underestimated how seriously all Americans, but particularly, as you say, black Americans take their right to vote, and how many people have died for it, and how hard, some people have had to fight for it.
Well, and the other thing, too, is they may not realize that some of us know that from the very first Continental Congress, the conservative movement has always opposed majority rule in this country. And there are many of us who believe that if they have their way, the people who claim to be libertarian, the people who support the conservative movement, what they'd like to do is return the country to a time when the elite class rules the country, which is ironic because the founding fathers did everything they could to try to make sure that never would happen.
They, as Mike Tomosky wrote, I mean, they're more racist today than they were during Nixon's Southern strategy. This is not just coded or suppression techniques. This is, they're writing it into law in state after state. And so it's, and if they think, black folks aren't going to notice, then you are all up in the night, let me just say. All right. I am thankful for our president, and thank God. We were saying during the press conference yesterday, Jim was joking about, because they were pushing him about Syria, and
right.
He's like, George Bush would have bombed Crete by now. I'm glad we have a president that is like, let's find out what happened first.
Right.
He said there is evidence that chemical weapons have been used, but the U.S. doesn't know how they were used, when they were used, and who used them, and he would not be rushing to judgment without more facts. It's not the die, kill, kill strategy that we have been used to.
It even...
From Dick Cheney and the likes.
We have to strike now, sir. Annihilate.
Right.
Kill. Kill.
Shut up. Shut up. Shut.
That was the length of the entire discussion before Iraq. Obama stopped short of promising further action. All he would say is if chemical warfare was confirmed, he would have to rethink the range of options that are available to us. He insisted Americans are not simply bystanders in the war, repeated his call for Bashar Assad, who has killed his own people, to step down. Thank God for him.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oh, Elizabeth Colbert. They had the South Carolina debate last night.
Well, a couple of nights ago. Yeah.
Elizabeth Colbert Bush.
When we talk about fiscal spending and we talk about protecting the taxpayers, it doesn't mean you take that money we saved and leave the country for a personal purpose.
Whoa!
Snap. Bam. Nothing but net. Here is Mark Sanford.
He compared himself to Bill Clinton here.
Do you think that President Clinton should be condemned for the rest of his life based on a mistake that he made in his life? You don't go through the experience I had back in 2009 without a greater level of humility.
Wow. I know Bill Clinton. We've all worked with Bill Clinton. You are no Bill Clinton, sir, but thanks for bringing it up. Wow.
Yeah, he talked about like the experience was thrust upon him. He put himself through that experience.
Yeah. By the way, Bill Clinton didn't leave the country during the Lewinsky thing and
Right. Leave
the keys to someone else, you know, while he was whatever.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for us today. I'd like to thank executive producer, engineer, boy toy, Chris Lavoy, voice deity, Jim Ward, Travis on phones and drums. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.